name is Kim and I'm an addict. And now, it's so funny because I can't really see you guys' face, but that's okay because I know that your spirit is out there. And I'm so grateful to be in a room of Narcotics Anonymous. I am so blessed. I come from a different region, and I hope it's not going to be rude, but can I keep it real? Would you mind if you're standing up, if you could just sit down, and if you're talking, could you not talk? Because I don't want to be nervous up here, and I need some help. I'd like to thank God, first of all, for giving me an opportunity to be here with you guys. I am truly blessed. I'd like to thank my support system, who's taught me everything I've learned, and Narcotics Anonymous for giving me another chance at life. And more importantly, I'd like to thank this committee for giving me an opportunity to share a message of hope. You know, you guys, that little performance was really, it was a great performance. I mean, it's difficult to be kind of nervous up here when you have performers like that. I've came a long ways to be with you guys, and I kind of was thinking back on, you know, my dream. I never thought that I was going to grow up to be an addict. I kind of like knew I had maybe some problems because I always wanted to be special. And the one person who stood out the most in my life was my grandmother. My grandmother was the woman who taught me everything about life, about principles and values. And it was real difficult staying in my disease for a very long time as a result of those values that I was taught. I want you to know that the reason I'm here in front of you guys, because I had a lot of angels out there, and those were the ones who took care of me. I mean, I had a lot of angels. I had people that said things like, "You don't belong out here. Maybe you should get clean." Even the dope man started kind of wondering if, you know, this is the time that maybe, just maybe, you could be the one person that actually leave this area and go get clean. I want to thank my family for supporting me. My sister is out in the crowd, and it's kind of a weird feeling because this is the first time that actually a family member actually gets to hear my story. Because I come from a family where everything is hidden. You know, they just don't talk about it. You know what I mean? They like, they say things like, "Yeah, Kim went away." she had just a little bit of a problem. But the reality is that I was really full blown. I was getting high in Philadelphia because that's where I was born and raised. And this is actually the first time I actually spoke in the East Coast, so this is like so cool. So I was getting high in Philadelphia, and you know, I was getting high during the time when it was cool to mix stuff. And I mean, I should have known that maybe I might have had a problem because, well, I used to get my dust from funeral homes, and maybe that should have been a clue, but you know, I really didn't get a clue there. Yeah, I kind of just thought that it was kind of cool that they mixed stuff together in chemicals, you know. I was unknowing. And I got high in Philly, and, you know, I gotten to a point where I was hurting my whole family. Everyone, like, started praying for me. In fact, my grandmother would have these prayer meetings. In my favor, Wednesday night prayer meeting would be about Kim, you know, hoping that maybe she would change. And They went through life like kind of thinking of ways of changing me. And they tried some things. And finally, my mother gave me an opportunity to make some changes in my life. She told me that, you know what, I'm tired of you dying. I'm tired of watching you die. You can go anywhere you want, and we'll pay for you to get there. I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. So why don't I go to California? Because, see, I had this preconceived idea that everybody out there is rich, and they're all movie stars, and I was going to become one. And so that wasn't real, but whatever. So I get out to California, and what I didn't know is I took me with me. And so I get out there, and it only take about 2 weeks before you figure out the crowd that you want to hang around, right? I don't even think it took me 2 weeks. I actually knew exactly where to go. Usually you start off at the park. When you walk around the park, you can find the ones that smoke a little weed. And then, you know, from there, you can find the real stuff that you're looking for. And I actually went full-blown in San Diego. Actually, it was actually in Oceanside. My last day using, well, the last incidents of using consisted of, it was Mother's Day. Now, Mother's Day isn't really Mother's Day like we know it. Mother's Day is welfare day for us. And there, it is. That's the day that we make all these promises to the kids. I said, what you guys want today? And they told me their whole list. Now, Mom, don't forget to get the Kmart layaway out. And don't forget the McDonald's food. And don't forget this. And they gave me a whole list. And you know what? Of course, they were going to get all those things, long as they were going to leave me alone for the rest of the day. And so I had good intentions. I woke up with very good intentions. But needless to say, the mailman was taking an awfully long time. And I was going to have a little bit of a problem with that, you know, because I had already called the dope man. And I put in my code, 611. Then it became 911. Because we got an emergency now, you know. He never did call me back. And now I'm pacing back and forth from my apartment to this mailbox, back and forth. Finally, the mailman shows up. And, you know, and the mailman, you can tell that he's kind of getting tired of me because we go through this every month, you know. And he's gotten to the point where he don't even ask me for my ID anymore because he knows me. And so, you know, I get there and I'm waiting for him and I tell him, you know what, it's about dang on time you got here because I was getting ready to call your supervisor. So, needless to say, he was like, yeah, whatever, because he didn't take me serious anymore. I go commencing to cast my check, but I had to set some things up. Now, I told you guys I had really good intentions. Okay, so I knew that I probably should have had a babysitter, but my parenting skills still needed to be refined a little bit. I mean, I knew that maybe there was a problem with the fact that leaving my babies alone was going to be a problem, but my daughter, I kind of thought that she was capable of doing it because she had been taking care of her brother for a very long time anyway because, you know, I spent most of my time in the bathroom. And these are the times that I kind of was thinking that, you know, maybe she could fill in one more time. And what I didn't let you guys know is that my daughter was 5 and my son was 10 months. You know, and as I think about that now, something just don't seem right about it. You know, but at the time it was like I taught her everything. Well, actually, she had to learn how to take care of her brother. And she had to learn how to take care of me too. And I had put all that on a 5-year-old, and she had became really good at it. And, you know, as a result of doing the type of drugs I did, and it was crack cocaine, I became a little paranoid. And so I would say things like, don't ever open the door because they will take you. And I had this little girl so petrified of being taken that she would never answer the door. And I told her that I'll be back. I'm going to go cash a check and go pick up the McDonald's stuff and get the layaway and, you know, and all the things that I was going to supposedly do. And I had intentions on doing those things, but I got a little distracted because once I got to the check cashing place, the dope man arrived because he knew exactly where I would be. And so he sold me my package and we were going to, you know, just be a few minutes. Few minutes turned into an hour or maybe even two. I got a little off track and I lost track of time, and before I knew it, it was like 2 or 3 hours later, and I remember, oh yeah, I was supposed to bring some food back for my kids. And so I called home because I forgot what I was supposed to be bringing back. Short time memory. And my daughter didn't answer the phone. Actually, Oceanside Police answered my phone. I thought I was imagining something, that maybe I dialed the wrong number, but truly it was Oceanside Police. And instantly I had a story, and this was my story. I asked a girlfriend to come by and babysit my kids. I will be leaving right now. She can let herself in, and I will be back shortly. And so as I commenced to telling the story to the officer, he says, sure, that's no problem. Why don't you come down to the police department and pick up your kids? I said, yeah, that sounds like a very good idea, and I'll be down there shortly. And I remember the arrogance that I had at that time. The one thing that I was having a problem with was the fact that I have this package of dope, and it's going to be a little bit inconvenient to take it down to the police department. So I'm going to have to figure out a place to put it. So I run all the way back to my apartment. I had it in my mind that if I seen that apartment manager, I was going to curse her out because I know she had something to do with this. So I'm looking for a place to hide my dope, and I had a bright idea. Put it in the garbage disposal and put the dishes on top of it. I always had bright ideas like that. And that's what I did. And I'll go down to the police department and I'm explaining this situation. And before I even get halfway through my story, the officer is reading me my rights, handcuffing me to the table, and I just couldn't figure out what was wrong. More importantly, I was trying to figure out how I'm going to get out of this because I got a whole sack of dope at home and I need to hurry up and get back to it. And you know, never once did it bother me the fact that they had my kids and that my kids would be afraid and that it was real scary for them to be out of their element and that they didn't know where they were going. You know, those thoughts really didn't come into my mind at first. The only thing I was thinking about is how I'm going to get rid of this feeling, because I'm feeling a little hopeless right now, and I have to numb it. Well, I had to do my 72 hours, and so they released me. And I'm still a little paranoid, and what normally would have taken maybe 45 minutes to walk home from that release place actually took me about an hour and a half, maybe even longer, because I had to hide behind every tree because I thought that they were following me, and I had to hide behind every car because I thought that they were following me. But I do remember actually getting to my apartment, and this is the one time where I never really noticed that light being above my apartment. But this night, the light was off. And as I commenced to getting closer to my apartment, I could see this note on my door. And it stated 3 days eviction. Now, I should have been a little worried, but the only thing I was thinking about was, what day did they put this on here? Did they put this on here yesterday? Do I have 3 more days to get high? Do I need to leave right now? Are they coming tonight? That was the most baffling thing. And going inside that apartment and seeing the emptiness, not seeing my furniture. I never recall getting rid of the furniture. I must have sold it or something. But I know this was the day that it was like an awakening for me. And it was real dark and lonely. And I knew exactly how I was going to get rid of that feeling. I was going to have to be high for a very long time. Now, I didn't know how I was going to stay high. I just knew I was going to have to get high. But of course, I always meet those people that's going to help me be better, right? Those are the ones that says, "Don't worry about it, Kim. We can stay high. I'll teach you." You know, and I really thought that he was my friend because he says he's going to teach me how to work the streets. Well, don't all friends do that? Or is that unique? Well, I didn't really get a clue in the beginning because I had this problem. Well, first of all, I had some values still, some principles still. And my dress was a little bit too long to really work the street. I mean, it was actually my church dress. And so that kind of made it difficult to pick up a trick. So I had to learn what to do. And he says, "Oh, no, that's not going to work. Come here." And so he took me in a corner of behind the gas station. And he cuts my dress, like, you know, it wasn't to my knee. It was actually above my knee, way above. And he made me a mini dress. He says, "Yeah, this will work just fine." And I just thought that was the coolest guy, because who else would take care of you like that, you know? That was the beginning of my beginnings. I had this grandmother who loved me so much, who always knew how to catch up with me. She knew where to look every time. Okay, I start living in these hotels, right? Because that's where working girls live, right? So I live in hotels. And my grandmother would, like, find me. Because I really had a nice personality. Those things you just don't lose, right? And the manager would like me. And they would say simple things like, "Kim, you can stay here. I have no problem with it, but don't mess with any of my customers." And I always had good intentions. I said, "Okay, no problem. I will not touch any of your customers." But, you know, I had a little bit of a problem with that because sometimes they were my customer first, right? So that didn't count. Or I didn't know that they were the manager's customers, so that didn't count either. And so I would have a conflict, and then, of course, you know, the manager would put me out. And here we go again. But my grandmother always found a way of finding me. She would call every hotel in Oceanside. And they would say, "No, I had to put her out here, but I heard she was over at Johnny's place." And, you know, sure enough, I would be over at Johnny's place, and my grandmother would find me. And, you know, and she was the one person that was consistent. She kept her number the same. And I could always call her when I was feeling so hopeless that I just wanted to die. When they took my kids from me, I kept thinking that, you know, there is no really reason to live. And I should just end it. But it took so much courage to, like, cut my wrists or something. So I thought that I could do it in the means of smoking more dope. You know, and it would be times where my heart would palpitate. I mean, to the point where I just felt like it was coming out of my chest and I could feel it, and I would put a bigger rock on because I was hoping to die. Because if I had to exist another day without them, there was no reason to live. And I went through about 6 or 7 months of this. I mean, it really started to get bad. But I always had these angels out there. Other than my grandmother, there were other angels. Like, they came in the form of a trick, and he would say things like, "I believe in you, Kim." Really, he did. "And I want to help you. So this is what I'll do. I'll pay for you to go to detox, and you can move into the apartment with me. How convenient. And, you know, I would say, oh, sure, no problem. And I commenced to go into these detox programs, you know, and I tried really hard to do this clean thing. You know, I would go to detox, get clean for 14 days, and then at my release, I would work the streets back to home, whatever home would be. And then I would say, well, maybe the next time I go to detox, I'll do a little different. Maybe I won't work the streets to get drugs. Maybe I'll work the streets so that I can get extra money so that I can have clothes and CDs. And actually, they didn't have CDs then. They had tapes and jewelry. And see, those are important things to me. And, you know, if you get a big enough piece of jewelry, you could always save it for the dope man. So, I mean, I had good motives, you know. And so that's what I did a couple of few times. And then this one time I came home from detox and I had another bright idea that I was going to go save my friends because it was starting to feel a little lonely. You know, I'm the only one getting clean around here. And, you know, and what about them? Why do they still get to get loaded? So I'm going to go visit my friends at the dope house just so I can tell them how good detox is, you know, right? Oh, as if no one else has done that before. That's right. So I took my nice shiny blue, that's the basic text, took my basic text into the dope house, and I said, I'm not going to get high today. I'm just going to bring them information. Uh-huh. So I go there, and they say, oh, Kim, we heard you went away for a while. I said, yeah, that's right, but I'm back. I said, oh, that's cool. So we sitting in the living room, you know, doing nothing, watching TV. And then they go to the back room, and I'm still sitting out in the living room with their kids, watching TV. I start watching them. They start watching me. I'm watching them. They're watching me. Mike went out, but that's okay. I'm watching them and they're watching me. I don't know what to do. But that's okay. Hi. Oh, I'm having a great time. Can you still hear me? Okay. Watching them, they're watching me. That's all right. They were still watching me. I was watching them. Oh, but the tape is still on.
That's right.
Cool. Okay. So they're watching me. I'm watching them. That's kind of fun, watching him run back and forth. I don't want you guys to miss no parts, right? So I'm going to just keep putting it at the point of they're watching me, I'm watching them. Because this is real important that I give you all the information, you know. Ah! Thank you, honey. So they were watching me, I'm watching them. And I decided that maybe I should go see what they're doing back there. Oh, like you've never tried that before. Okay, so I take my basic text. I'm going to go back there, just check out what they're doing. Okay, so half hour later, we cutting up dope on the basic text, but... I tried to share a message of recovery. It wasn't time yet. Okay, So I commit to doing this, you know what? But I'm getting to a point where I'm really getting tired. I think I'm going to back up because I hear this echoing behind me. So I'm getting to a point where I'm really getting tired of getting high because I'm not really getting high anymore. I'm now just going through the motions. You know what I mean? When you're just going through the motions and you don't know what else to do, but you're still doing it, right? But you know what? I'm not going to go down alone. So I kept me a couple of rocks, and I would do stuff like this. I put one down. I said, sure. I know you guys want to get high. It's all right. I start talking about my kids while we all getting high. Before you know it, we all start crying. It got so bad that when they see me coming, even if I had dope, they would say, we'll let you in under one condition. If you say anything about your children, you got to go. I would even say things like, I know you're stealing my dope, but it's all right. We all gonna go down together anyway. Yeah, I really started messing with them because, you know, I was starting to get miserable out there. I mean, I would, like, make a bunch of noise when the ones, you know, the ones that need quiet. I go to the window, open it up, shut it. You see, because I'm not going to be miserable alone. All right? And, you know, and they would get me back every now and again. They'd go across the drywall and bring it down so I have a lot to look for. But that's all right. It's fair play in love and war. I understand that. But I'm getting tired, though. I'm really getting tired. I'm getting to the point where I can't get high no more. And I have to make a change. Detox didn't work. Okay, maybe it just didn't work for me. So I had a bright idea. I'm going to go to a gay and lesbian recovery home. Okay, so what? I wasn't gay, but it didn't matter. Okay, so that didn't work. And so I commenced to getting high right after that. But I really loved that recovery home. They were so real. That's the only place that I didn't have to perform. You know what I mean? I know. I'm just toying with you guys. See, I can have fun in recovery today. So, when that didn't work, you know what? I had to come up with another bright idea, and I had it. I'm missing one thing. God. I wish that I actually got a clue at that time, because I had a little bit of a problem with praying morning, noon, night, afternoon. We get up in the morning, pray. The whole time they was praying, I was like, oh, I got to come up with an idea to get out of here. Oh, this is not working. The more they prayed, the more I wanted to get high. So I figured that maybe this wasn't going to work either. And so I went back to my lifestyle. But it definitely wasn't working anymore. And I was really getting tired. And I tried to... Okay, so this car drives up. Okay, and so I'm really greedy. So the car drives up, and he says, do I know where I can get something? And I was like pushing my friend over. No, you don't do it. I do it. He might be undercover. So as I was explaining to the officer... No, but they knew me by name now. They said, Kim, you know, That's another angel now that I think about it. Because these officers said, they were actually angels. Because they said, Kim, you don't belong out here. And we're going to do you a favor. We're going to take you in for a little while. You know, book you. You're going to spend some time with us. And I kept thinking, you know, if they hurry up, we could actually get in there in time to have some dinner. You know, because you, I don't know about you guys, but when it comes to getting high and eating, I'm only getting high. When it comes to taking baths, taking showers, changing clothes, paying bills, my only priority when I'm getting high is getting high. In fact, I gave up smoking cigarettes and drinking because I was dedicated to getting high. Which stand the reason my dedication to recovery, because while I'm in this jail, right, I'm learning all these things about recovery, because thank God for H&I. I'm learning about recovery, and yeah, well, I had my own motives. They did give out coffee at the meeting, but you know what? That was all good. You know, that got me there. But I start kind of listening, and they said, did you never have to live like this again? I think I did hear that one slogan, you never have to live like this again. You never have to live like this again. Whoa. You know what that means? That meant that I could actually change my life. I mean, the dope man really did have a point when he would say things like, you know what, I feel sad selling something to you, Kim. You know, it was times when he would, like, give me dope just so that I would, like, take a shower or fix a scab or, you know, just anything. And it had gotten bad out there. So when I start learning about that there's another way, why wouldn't I want to? I don't know. I guess I never heard it when I went to all those detoxes and different programs, but I definitely heard it in there. And, you know, and I thought about it. If I stay here long enough, then just maybe I can learn how to live differently. So, you know, they used to take me to court, and they would say, 6 months. I was like, cool, I'll have 6 months when I get out of here. Cool. And they would take me to court on another case, because I had quite a few. They say, 3 months. I'm like, three? Shoot, that's 9 months. Oh, I'm going to have 9 months. That is so cool. Then they would say, 3 months consecutive. Now, I didn't know too much about the language, but now it just seemed like I was going to start losing time. It wasn't going to really work out to be a year in there. So I was going to have to come up with some other solutions. So they had a bright idea for me. Why don't you go to this recovery home? I'm like, yeah, recovery home. I think I could do that. Oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you guys I was about 7 months pregnant by then. And it's kind of not appealing to work the streets when you're pregnant. So that was another urge to do something different. So I get a choice. Do the next 6 days of this jail or go to a recovery home? 6 days, recovery is about 6 months. 6 months in a group home, 6 days here. Okay, we'll try it. So I go to this recovery home. All right, they pick me up in this van. They take me to this town where they said no blacks go, right? Now, I had a little bit of a problem about that, but I said, I'm just going to try it anyway. Now, we drive up to it's literally a last house on the block, and it didn't look like a house. It looked like a big white do you say that? You know how on the background had a lot of land, and then the building was white? Oh, you know what I'm talking about. It kind of looked like a plantation, right? I had this weird thought. Are they allowed to have slaves still? So I'm walking down this brick road, pregnant, with a dress about this small. The only thing I did have is a long t-shirt to cover that big belly. And so I get in there, and they're welcoming me. Hi, how are you? How you doing? And I'm being very careful. I'm looking at each and every one of them. First of all, I think I had a little bit of a problem because they said it was 50 women in there. That meant 50 different personalities. I don't know. Something about civil played a big part in this. So I was a little cautious, and I'm being very mindful of everything they did. And they would say, come on in. We want to show you your room. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I don't have anything, so they're not going to get anything from me. I actually completed that program. That was an awesome program. But they introduced me to Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah. I remember when they introduced me to Narcotics Anonymous. I used to love getting on that van to go to a meeting. Well, I had some motives. They had some guys there, but that was all right. Because, you know, I could only look at them because it was a real strict program, you know. But I hooked up with some really solid predecessors. That's why it's really baffling to me to see all that movement and talking. Oh, my God. Even, like, sitting there, I was being a little distracted by one of your chair members. I have to tell on him because he kept talking to me. But I kept telling him that I didn't want to talk. I want you to know. I was taught these certain principles. We were taught, sit down in the front and shut up. Right? Now, my predecessors were serious. They did not play. They personally talked to me. In fact, they tapped me on the shoulder. Kim, in fact, for you, don't be prancing around here acting like you need to get some coffee and cake with your little short dress on. Why don't you sit down next to me and get a book, and I will be sponsoring you. You know, I think back on it now, and it's like, I really don't sponsor like that. And my sponsee will tell you, she's out there. I actually brought one of them with me. But I am serious about recovery. And I'm serious about service work. And I am serious about our fellowship. See, I don't just show up when it's cake time. I'm out there marching. I believe in being a soldier in recovery of Narcotics Anonymous. See, it's no joke. See, because this disease tried to rob me of everything I love. It wanted to take my kids, my family, my siblings. It wanted to take me and just eat me up. So when we talk about lost dreams, oh, I have a dream. I dreamt that I could actually be clean and be free. Do you know what that means, to be free? Oh, there is such a freedom of not being committed to using every day. What a freedom. If you're new to our fellowship, sit down, shut up. No. No. Really. No. Sit next to somebody that has some clean time, but not just clean time, some quality. And ask them how they do it. You want to know how you get a year? You ask somebody with a year, you don't sit next to somebody with 30 days, ask them how we get a year. Oh, we'll tell you everything here. It's no secret. Oh, we'll tell you how to even get in debt around here. I hope I don't touch nobody. But you know what? Those credit cards will make you work a program. So, they had some unwritten rules, right, about relationships. It's not in the book because I looked. And they said, if you're not in a relationship, Kim, for your first year, we think that it's probably best that you don't get in one. I said, okay. You know, because I was afraid that I might have to go back to the way I was living before. And that was not pretty. And this, and I'll tell you, recovery sometimes is difficult. But it's nothing like the getting and using every day. I mean, I had to stay high all day and all night to get rid of that feeling of not being a good mama. No, you don't hear me. I had to stay high all day and all night to get rid of the feeling of not being a good sister, not being a good mother, not being a good daughter, not being a good wife. I wasn't faithful. I couldn't do anything but get high all day, all night. But the one thing that really tore me up is not being a good mama. That really got me. So when they told me some simple rules that maybe you won't get loaded, just maybe you won't, I was listening. See, I believe in predecessors. And I don't know, like the newer generation, they kind of like question you. I never questioned anything. They told me to be at my house at 5. I was there at 4:30. My sponsor told me things like, you're going to be doing your step every week. Go pick up your sisters because you're the only one that have a car. I said, okay. Because I believe that if I did that service work, that I get to keep my car. See, God gave me that car. It wasn't questionable in my mind what I was going to be doing around here. Oh, we're going to be marching. So they said, don't get in a relationship for your first year. And I was a little afraid, so I waited 18 months. And in that other 6 months, I was looking. I said, oh, no, I can't be with him. I see him with so-and-so. Nope. He don't really talk when he preach. Not him. Oh, no, definitely not him either. No way. No, I heard about what he do to girls. So I was looking, and I figured that maybe, just maybe, I'll get somebody with substantial clean time, and then I can stay clean. Okay, all right, I should have thought about it when the person had 8 years and I only had a year and a half, but you know what? We all have motives. He had a credit card, and I would accompany him to events, like dances and meetings. And I would be on his arm and in exchange for him to buy me things. And then, you know, something about that after you work some steps just don't seem right, you know? I know. I used to be able to get away with everything. But when you start working steps, like, things just don't seem right anymore. You know? I have to start changing. I start embracing change. I said, well, maybe the problem is this guy has too much clean time. So we're going to go with something in between. So my next boyfriend had 5 years. Okay. All right. Maybe I should have thought about the fact that he had a lot of children. But you know what? The girls that were telling me about this, I just thought that they wanted my boyfriend. You know, they just jealous. All right. Maybe I should have thought about the fact that he sold dope in recovery. But you know what? He was just trying to make ends meet. You know, I don't care what they said about this guy. Even though they said he was promiscuous, that was a little bit of a problem. But One day, he just didn't look so good. I didn't know, all my friends kept telling me things, but none of that mattered. It was the one day that he just didn't look so good. That's when I decided to change. Now, okay, I didn't, like, not drive by his house anymore, but I tried. I just didn't ring the doorbells, and I did eventually stop calling his phone and hanging up, because I started working some steps in that area, and it got better. And what I decided to do was, maybe relationships isn't something that I can do right now, and maybe I need to get to know me. See, because that's the real reason why we start to suggest that you don't get in a relationship for your first year. Because the reality is, what do you have to offer in your first year? You know what I mean? See, because it's so funny, because I have to tell you guys this. Sometimes I go to those little dances that they have that the recovery homes have put on. And it's funny. Like, the newcomer guy will be dancing next to me, and he'll be saying some things like, "How you doing?" And I'll say, "Just fine." I'll be dancing. He says, "Yeah, when are we going to get together?" I said, "What's your sponsor think about that? And how much clean time you said you had? And what you think you're going to be able to offer any woman at this point when you're living in a recovery home?" "What?" I said, "Let's stick to dancing, okay?" So I decided to keep working on me for a little bit more. And, you know, maybe doing some parenting stuff, you know, because sometimes we have to come outside our fellowship to learn some stuff, right? You know that. So I decided to go take some parenting classes, because my parenting actually needed to be revised, you know, because I believed in the beginning that you got punished and a whooping for everything. But then they taught me, you know, timeouts, consistency. Yeah, something about consistency I had to work on a little bit more. But I start working on me, and things got a little bit better. Then one day I'm like going to the pawn shop to go buy something. Unlike with the guy that did the parenting, I mean the couple's relationship thing said, I actually was going to the pawn shop to go and purchase something. I was looking for a diamond and emerald bracelet. I was going to the pawnbroker. I was going to negotiate. And this guy is on the outside of the pawn shop. And if you have the car in your early recovery, you're the one who's in charge of taking all the kids. It don't matter which color, all of them. You get all your friends' kids. So I had quite a few children with me, and I had a big enough vehicle to take them. And I'm going to this pawn shop, and this guy is on the outside. And he says, "Hello." I said, "How you doing?" I go in, I come out. He's still out there. He says, "So, when are we going out?" And usually, I mean, I have a lot of responses, but this time I use one I never really used before. I've never used it before, in fact. I said, "When your girlfriend says it's okay." He says, "Oh, she won't mind." I'm thinking, what a jerk. I could definitely not talk to him. So I just spent back around and kept on moving it. And the guy is like running after me, wanting to give me his phone number. He gives me his phone number on this, "Do you have a drug problem?" And you know, our little NA cards, I don't know if you have them here in the East Coast, but we have these NA cards that say, "Do you have a drug problem?" And it allows you to put your number on there. Because what we really do with those, unlike what this guy was trying to do, is we try to give them to people that ask us to sponsor them, or, you know, they want our phone number to build a support group. And I was like kind of jazzed, because I didn't have nothing on me that indicated that I was part of this fellowship. And so I was looking at the cart like, cool. So I must have forgotten what our trusted leader was, Jimmy K. And I'm thinking, so you're a friend of that other guy from that other fellowship, huh? He says, no, I don't know him. I'm thinking, oh, gosh, must be a newcomer. So I said, oh, okay, yeah, I'll take your number. And I put his number in this basket because I used to play games because, you know, early recovery, we were bored. And we would go to, like, clubs, and we would play things like who can get the most numbers or who can get the one guy to buy us all breakfast or how many numbers can you get in an hour? You know, stupid stuff like that. I mean, but, you know, we were still clean, but we didn't have nothing else to do. I mean, that was joyous for us. And so I just put this number in that basket. One day I'm cleaning out the basket, and I looked at it, and it said, Daryl. Daryl. Wonder who this is. So I call him up, and he's getting ready to go to this spiritual retreat. I'm thinking, cool, a spiritual man. That might work. You know how we do it, because in one date, we can almost marry a person. Well, in our mind. I said, a spiritual man. Asked him about if he liked kids. He said, he liked kids and don't have any. Ooh, that checks off the list. I said, so can I go with you? He says, oh, no. You have to be married to go to this spiritual retreat. I'm like, principles, values, check. So when he comes back, I said, well, when you come back, would you give me a call and we can go to a meeting? He's like, yeah, no problem. So when he comes back, he calls me and he said, I have a couple of gifts for you. I'm like, he gives gifts too, check. He might work out. I might be able to keep this one. Okay. So I go to pick him up, and see, I still don't know what he looked like. And then I pick him up, and I remember. This is that surfer-looking black guy that had surfer clothes on that I would never, 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 nothing like the guys that I would definitely date. I don't mean, I usually only draw thugs. You know, guys that don't have no purpose. You know, ones that are kind of like losers in our fellowship. That's the ones I usually draw on. And this guy didn't fit that category. So we might have a problem. So I asked him how much clean time he had. And, you know, we have that unwritten rule about, you know, 13-stepping. I have to be careful about using that these days because I start reading some information. And I don't know if you guys know it, but in that book of history of our fellowship, they actually had a 13th step. And it wasn't nothing bad. It was called pray. It was pray, right? Anybody know? Yeah. So I'm a little careful about using that word 13th step, but I just knew he didn't have enough clean time to sit next to me and my girlfriends. So we're going to have a problem. So because he's a gentleman, you know, I would say things like, okay, I'm going to sit over there near my friends, and you're welcome to sit wherever you like. He says, okay, Kim. Cool. But we would have one problem. I'd be sitting there talking, chatting with my friends. He would go get coffee. He would get an extra cup for me. And he would bring it to me. And he would give it to me in front of my friends, right? And I would, like, take the cup of coffee. Thank you. You're like, it's okay. And so as if they didn't know. So we did this for like 4 months until he became a year. As if my friends couldn't figure out that I was actually seeing this guy. But the guy turned out to be a really nice guy. I mean, actually enjoys recovery. And, you know, for me to even be with somebody in recovery, they have to love recovery as much as I do. They have to really love recovery, and they have to continue to work on themselves. You know, they actually have to have some things like a sponsor, and I'm not it. You know, have a God, I'm not it. You know, have a purpose, you know, and it's not just me. And this guy was, like, really pumped up in a passion for recovery. You know, in fact, I would call my sponsor, and I'd be a little bit envious because he kind of like superseded past me in his step work. I was stuck. I was on this one step, and it took a long period of time because my sponsor had us working. Before we had that step working guide, they had generated something else. And literally, the first step had like 109 questions. And we would only do 10 a week. So you can tell how long that would take. And so he was doing his step and completing his step. And every time I turned around, he was like completing another step. So I called my sponsor. I said, we got to hurry up because Daryl's now past me in step working, and we can't have that. She looked at me like, what are you talking about? We don't race through the steps around here. You got me twisted with someone else. What we will do is do the next 10, and you better be at my house next week. So that's the type of people I have in my life. And one day I just like stop complaining about him. I start getting better. You know, it's funny how that works. As I work on me, everything else seemed to look a little bit better out there, you know? What I do in recovery, my greatest joy is probably working with women. I love sponsorship. And I really, really enjoy it. Now, I've learned over the years how to be a better sponsor. At first, I was so controlling that I run them all off. And then I learned some things about, you know, balance and boundaries and, you know, kind of like just setting some boundaries in that area. And I'm so happy we have an IP, that's the information pamphlet, on sponsorship. It's orange if you're ever looking for it. And this pamphlet kind of like dictates what we're going to do. So if anybody asks me to sponsor them, I always tell them, please get that pamphlet, because it kind of pretty much say what we're going to do around here. I'm not the babysitter, so don't ask me to babysit your kids. I'm not lending you any money, so don't ask me. If you get to the meeting, I will give you a ride home, but I am not the taxi. And you know what? If you want to recover, you're going to have to do some work, because there's no free rides. You know, it's so funny because people will hear you speak or hear you share at a meeting, and they'll run up to you and say, can you sponsor me? And I'll say something like, have you really thought about that and prayed on it? Because this is no joke. I mean, you've met me for a half a second, and you want me to sponsor you? You might want to like kind of watch me. Watch how I am in the rooms, because see, I believe in practicing these principles. And see, I can sound real good right out here with you in front of the podium, but if you really want to know how I live this program of Narcotics Anonymous, watch me with my children. Those are the ones that make you work a program, okay? Or watch, come to my house for a function. That'll get you, because I'm usually stressed. I tell you, one time I had a function at my house, and it was like Thanksgiving. I was so stressed out, I backed into my husband's truck. Then I was too afraid to come home, and everybody's at the function waiting for me. Now, that's working a program, but I eventually kind of like got to a point where I can actually work with sponsees and see their growth and where they at. And you know, and that's such a great quality, because they don't have to be where I'm at. They just have to be in recovery. They have to be of service. They have to be in recovery. They have to be of service. And it's real clear. When you ask me to sponsor you, please have a commitment. And if not, please get one. And you know, and the one other thing that I would like to share with you guys is that you can have anything you want in recovery. It just takes a little bit of work. And in the beginning, I really didn't have a lot of skills, right? So I wanted to go back to school, you know, and I didn't even know if I could do this. But I really wanted to go back to school. So I signed up. I go back to school. I said, shoot, I could do this. 18 units, that's fine. I get my 18 units. I did the six-month program. I go get this job in the insurance industry because all my friends were actually becoming counselors. But I told myself that there have to be another job out there other than counseling. Lord, not everybody have to be a counselor, do they? So I go get this job in the industry, the insurance industry, and I start, like, wanting a little bit more. And I'm sharing this with you guys to tell you that dreams really do come true, but you have to dream them first. In order for you to have a dream, you have to be able to dream it. Like, for example, I used to never think that I could ever get to Hawaii because I used to think that that's just too far and it costs too much. But I'm here to tell you that it costs a couple of $100s. Go online and kind of check it out. And they have some awesome meetings there. And if you ever wanted to bet on it, their regional convention is the last weekend of October. You can bet your money on it. Every year, it's the last weekend of October. So I used to think that I could never have those things. But going and having a meeting in Hawaii is such an awesome feeling. I mean, you just can't imagine. Imagine this. Can you travel there with me just for a minute? Okay. The water is warm as bath water, right? And the fish are light blue, pink, polka dot, white. And they like swimming in between your legs. But it even gets better. Saturday sunrise meeting is actually on the ocean. We take our floaties out there. Oh, about 75 of us are on the ocean. We holding hands and we actually having a meeting on the ocean. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine it? See, because if you can't imagine it, you can't ever have it. Can you just kind of imagine touching the water, the waves are going, whoosh, shoo. Yeah, I come with sound effect. See, I believe in dreams. I believe in dreams because I'm living proof that if you can dream it, you can have it. I never thought that I could complete college. I didn't stop with those 18 units. I decided, you know what, I want a little bit more. I think I'm going to go for my bachelor's. Now, it's a sacrifice going back to school. The whole family sacrificed. And I believe in if the family sacrificed, I owe them to do a good job, right? And my whole fellowship sacrificed because they supported me through those times when I'm whining about I don't know if I can do it anymore another day. And they say, oh, yes, you can. We believe in you. So everybody sacrificed. So I owe our whole fellowship to do a good job. And so I went back to school. I completed school. And I said, well, shoot, you know, I'm a good little addict. Why stop there? Why don't I go for my master's? I'd never been a master before. So I go back to school and complete my master's. And I'm like, yeah, this feels pretty good. Now, I would tell you guys why I stopped there, but my husband made me promise I'd stop for a little bit. But the point I'm making is that, you know what, you can do anything you want. All you have to do is dream it and implement it. You know, and trust that God has a plan. I believe in God. I believe that He's brought me to this point. And I'm like so grateful that I get to actually share my life with you guys. I mean, I get to share a little part of me. And, you know, it could actually be very intimidating to see so many people out there. Luckily, the light is in my eye. But the bottom line, I pray. I pray that I can just, like, plant a seed, that there is hope, that you can dream, that you can have anything you want. All you have to do is believe. If you ever go out of town, please call World Service and get you a schedule. See, because that's my greatest joy, is going to a meeting somewhere else. I love it. I love being able to get a schedule. I go online. I don't care where I go. So I'm visiting family. I go to a meeting. I can't imagine going somewhere and not going to a meeting. I mean, Just the thought of actually being gone for 2 days and not go to a meeting just baffles me. So I encourage you, if you ever go anywhere, please don't think that there is no meetings, because there's even meetings in the Bahamas. Although I will have to warn you, I almost got robbed in the Bahamas, but you know, that was just the circumstances. Well, my husband was a little overdressed, and that's why they thought that we could be victimized. But you know what? That was just one isolated situation. They really do have probably some real good recovery there, you know. And they have meetings anywhere and everywhere you go. All you have to do is, like, call World Service. It's on the schedule. And I will leave you with this one other thing. I have an obligation to you guys to continue to go to meetings on a regular basis. And I would sure like to encourage, if there's any predecessors out there, please keep coming to meetings, because we need to know that you guys are out there and not just showing up for cake time. We need to know that you're working this thing called recovery. You know what I mean? Because if you've never seen somebody with 10, 15, 30 years clean, you never think that you can get that amount of time. You think that maybe this process stops at 9 years if you've never seen someone with 10. Or you think this process stops at 19 years if you've never seen someone with 20. But the reality is that we still go to meetings regularly if we work a program of Narcotics Anonymous. And working a program of Narcotics Anonymous gives us the freedom to be able to dream the dreams that we never dreamt before. And if I never gave you anything else, please don't stop dreaming, because you too can have anything you want. Thanks for allowing me to share my recovery with you.